Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is...
Aaron O'Brien.
And...
Holly Michelle.
Holly Michelle.
Oh, she's back.
It's been a while.
Yeah. A while. What's the last one we did that? Enterprise? Is that the one we did together?
I think it's the last one we did together. The, the Borg one.
The Borg one. That's right.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah.
That's a long time ago.
Mm-hmm. I was actually thinking that we used my... power strip that's my computer's hooked up to, and I've had my computer for a year, so it's
probably been about a year.
Well, it's been a year because we recorded over at the old Geekiverse the same day.
Did we?
Yep, we recorded there,
and we came,
and
over
then we
here?
Came over here.
Wow, that's a long time.
I think
ago.
We did a Nerds the Roundtable, which those don't happen very much anymore. Sorry, guys.
Yeah. Well, welcome back, and we are talking about the House of Cork this episode.
Yay. This episode, woo!
But we've got some cool different news, don't we?
We got news. We got two Discovery snippets. First, that Black Bolt from the Inhumans, the magnificent
your favorite Marvel series,
the magnificently terrible show, The Inhumans, which I reviewed on the Nerdynomicon channel, which Holly is a part of. You can watch it over there on their YouTube channel. Me and our friend Chris Chavez, we talked Inhumans, and we hated it. But Black Bolt himself.
Yeah, Anson Mount.
Anson Mount is playing Captain Christopher Pike. And he does have a very Jeffrey Hunter look to
He's
him.
He's got that lantern jaw, very, you know.
I just hope he shaves, because Christopher Pike had a nice, smooth face. And
yes,
every time I see Black Bolt, he's got lots of stubble.
Right, yes.
Hopefully he'll get his face waxed or something.
Yeah, so we got him, and that's cool. Nice to see we're going to get some traction on what's going to happen for the next season. Obviously we're going to get some Enterprise.
Like, as of the recording, as the recording of this episode, they're starting filming tomorrow. Doug Jones put out a video of himself on Facebook today shaving his head because he needs to start wearing the Saru prosthetics again.
Well, that guy, I mean, I know he makes an oodles of money, but he's always got some weird get up, and he's a weird looking guy though, isn't he?
He is. He's tall and lanky,
but
he's got a strange face too. He's not. Yeah, I think so.
I think I watched like a.
He's not.
You can see his face in the Guild, the season where they go to the con. He's one of the steampunk guys,
right?
Mm-hmm. That Clara is in love with.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's a very unique guy. He's got some very interesting. He's a lot older than I thought he was. I think he's in his 60s.
Really?
I didn't realize he was that old. I thought he was like 40 something. I don't know. But yeah, he's older, and he shaved his head so he can get back into that Saru mullet.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You know, he's smooth on the front and got the ganglia coming out the back.
Yeah.
We still don't know if those grow back, because we're super curious about how those taste.
Exactly.
Oh, wait. Holly hasn't seen that yet. But,
That's okay. Mainly, I was just thinking about how ganglia is a fun word.
Ganglia.
They eat those in the Mirror Universe.
That sounds like something your grandmother gets when she's older. She's like, I've got the ganglia.
The gangrenelia.
Going along with Discovery, we also got some interesting information about the Enterprise.
So we saw the Enterprise at the end, and everyone complained about how it wasn't exactly the same. And apparently,
there's a reason for it.
There's legal reasons for it. Although the two articles I read couldn't give me any of the actual legal reasons.
Clear as mud.
All they said was that there were legal reasons. And they started talking about how the J.J. Kelvin timeline films had to be different because they were from
Paramount.
Split.
Yeah, Paramount. From CBS. So they couldn't reproduce the old version of the Enterprise.
Which, that makes sense, but CBS owns the TV show, so why can't CBS reproduce something from the TV show they own? I don't understand why that is a thing.
So they said, they pointed out when you were reading the article before we started the show, that basically for legal reasons, they have to put, what did you say, 75% or 25% different?
It'd be 25% different from the original design.
Which is odd, because like you said, it is owned by CBS, but maybe there's other owners in the actual copyright or whatever you have for that for Enterprise.
Yeah, it's quite possible. Maybe the original owner, maybe the copyright is run out on that.
Mm-hmm.
Because it is 50 years.
Yeah.
Well, it's 51 years old this year.
You know,
so maybe that copyright ran out. But they didn't, the article didn't specify specifically. They just said legal reasons, like in quotes, and then it had to be 25% different.
Yeah. Who knows? Legal reasons. I was going to say that every time people ask me questions, I can't really give a good answer to. Legal reasons.
Legal reasons. Absolutely. That's our go-to now.
Legal reasons. Anyways, we are going on to Deep Space Nine, The House of Quark. And this is one of your favorites.
I love Quark episodes. And Holly wanted to talk about Quark. And I was like, oh, do you remember House of Quark? And she's like, no, I don't. And I'm like, well, then we should watch it. If you like Quark, I want to talk about Quark.
Yeah. He's just a fun character.
He is a fun character. And the guy is a great armature man.
Yeah.
He's a great actor.
So is Max Grodenshack, his brother Rom.
Yeah. Yeah. But House of Quark is season 3, episode 3, and it came out October 10th, 1994. Many moons ago. So, let's jump into it. So, we start off, we have Quark and Rom are looking a little upset at the bar. When Morin leaves with his girlfriend, or soon-to-be girlfriend, and...
Because that's not his wife, because we see his wife later.
Yes.
That's not
his wife. It's Morin. And,
he's a player.
And Quark even makes the joke that, you know, rule of acquisition...
268 or something
when,
like that.
When Morin leaves the bar, you're in trouble or something like that. And it's Rom's like, That's not a thing.
Well, here it is.
Here it is. And then we find out there's one more customer left in the bar, and this is a Klingon who does not want to pay his bill.
He is unable to pay his bill.
Legal reasons. So... So he gets into a little argument with Quark. Quark tries to first get in his face, and then...
He's like, oh, let's open a line of credit. And for some reason, that's insulting
to
him.
That's insulting, yes.
Even though that's what he was asking for.
So what, do you want it for free? And then they get into a little scuffle, and unfortunately, this Klingon falls on his own dagger.
Yep.
And he dies.
He did. So much for those redundant organs.
Yeah, yeah. Well, maybe he had them pierced before. pierced organs. I got my spleen pierced.
I got a hoop.
Yeah, it's a Klingon.
I got a hoop through it.
I got a hoop through my stomach. The food just flies right out. Next, we get Bashir is examining him and the Klingon.
I love how they brought in a gurney,
yeah,
and they're just like looking at him in the pub instead of like taking him to sick bay.
And even Rom says, "I wish they'd take him out of here." You know,
like they do have transporters. They could have just beamed him to try to save his life, but nope, we're gonna wait for the gurney.
Wait for the gurney.
I have a feeling they didn't call for medical assistance immediately.
No. He's dead.
Right? They just kind of were like,
he ain't gonna make it. Bashir's like, nah, this one, we're gonna call it.
They can save you from phaser wounds and near death, but like just one little blade, really?
Yeah.
Also, if they brought a Klingon back to life, do you think they'd be very happy? Or
yeah, that's right. Just leave him dead. Maybe it's like a Ginsu.
Don't take them from the gates of Stovakor.
That's right, Stovakor. We haven't listened to Stovakor in a while.
Stovakor.
Yeah, but so. Quark makes this whole... He kind of blows this whole thing up. That this is where he is... If he pumps it up that he killed this Klingon...
Because it'll be good for business.
It'll be good for business. All these people are like, well, this is it. You know, I can't believe this happened. So they're going to all want to come and hear the story. Yeah, this Ferengi killed...
Klingon, what?
Yeah, so... And his brother is like, that's not a good idea. You shouldn't do that. Mm-hmm. And then Odo comes in asking about it. And Quark gets kind of beefy with Odo. It's like, if you're not going to buy anything, get out for a paying customer. Mm-hmm. And Odo's like, if I eat, it just sits in my stomach until I just dump it out in my bucket. You know, that's kind of weird. He's just drinking all that stuff. He doesn't really need anything.
He doesn't need it.
Yeah, it's kind of weird.
He just needs to go into his bucket to rest for a little while.
Yeah, I wish I had a bucket to rest in. Anyways.
You just want to turn into some Swiss cheese and melt?
Yeah, it'd be great. I'd love that. Get some good sleep. But Odo basically tells him that he's part of he's a head of a house.
Head of a Klingon house.
Klingon house. And that they're going to come asking questions about it, and you better be prepared. And, Quark seems like, whatever. Doesn't bother me. I can handle this.
And the next time we see Quark, he's just walking through a hallway, and he gets attacked by D'Gor.
Yeah.
The brother.
The brother comes in asking how his brother died. And D'Gor says his brother and that he had to die honorably. And
if he didn't, then I will have to seek vengeance.
Yeah,
D'Gor's like, oh yeah, yeah, he totally died.
Terrible. Meanwhile, through all this, we have our B plot. Miles comes home and finds that Keiko has closed the school down.
Synthale, give me a large one. That's going to be a long night.
It's going to be a long night. I need that Synthale.
Well, he didn't know before he ordered the beer.
I know. He knew.
He knew.
Once he walked in, he knew. Oh.
I don't know. Her attitude was already just like so...
Yeah, she was sort of like she didn't care, but she cared.
Right.
And, Miles, being the doting husband, was like, oh, my God, that's terrible. He's like, I never wanted to be a teacher anyways. I just kind of took it as something to do. But since the Dominion War is kind of looming over everything.
All the Bajorans are pulling their kids out.
Yeah, everyone wants to leave.
They should have done that before they had the kids.
That's right. You should have pulled out before.
Don't tease
8 years before.
Don't tease me with children for the school. You should have pulled them out before.
Oh,
it's terrible.
Guys, I'm sorry.
Anyways, so Miles feels bad, and he wants to do something to help her feel better.
It's the greatest wife in the universe day.
That's great. The galaxy. Was it universe or galaxy?
Galaxy. Galaxy.
Let's localize it a little bit.
The greatest wife in the Alpha Quadrant.
So he's going to take her to have a romantic dinner and do all these wonderful things.
You're home 5 minutes early. How is he expecting her to be out when the school is closed?
I was curious of that actually myself.
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean? Like, she's moping around because she's stuck in their room and she doesn't,
And if you're O'Brien, just like throw a tracing tracker bug on her,
He is the tech guy.
Yeah, I mean, come on. You don't do it all the time, but, if you want to make sure you can get everything set.
Sure.
I
just don't understand why it takes so long when you have replicators, but whatever.
Or, yeah. Well, it's like anything. It's procrastination.
Probably.
They have, like, Netflix and the DS9. It's like, I end up binge-watching, like, 6 shows. I meant to do all this work, like, 3 hours ago.
Oops.
So he takes her, on a
holosuite.
Holosuite thing. And they have a wonderful time together. And their kid's not to be seen anywhere. We have no idea where the kid is.
She's staying with the Robinsons.
As usual.
Or Bashir's just having fun watching the kid. Like, what do I do with a child? Here's my teddy bear. Don't touch it. But you can look at it.
Yes, you can look. That's it. Don't touch anything.
He loves his teddy bear.
He does love his teddy bear.
I can't remember his name.
I don't remember his name either. Anyways, we get the Klingon's widow shows up at Quark's bar. And she starts attacking Quark as well. And
Quark jumps behind the bar, grabs a platter, and like,
gets
don't
a tray.
Hurt me.
Don't hurt me. Yeah, so she finds out that he's a coward and would be no match. And so that's when Quark kind of just brings out like what actually happened. And at this point, she knocks him out with a tranquilizer and a hypo spray and takes him. And he wakes up in her house on Kronos and meets her advisor. And
I love how casual that is. It's like, knocks him out, gets him all the way to Kronos.
Yeah.
Kronos isn't, like, Kronos is across the, like, Alpha Quadrant.
They just kept on pumping them through at drugs.
They had to.
They just kept
that's,
on it.
That's not a short trip.
No.
Because Deep Space Nine's kind of like, Earth is, if you're looking at a pizza pie,
Earth's in the middle.
If you cut it into fourths, and that bottom line, Earth's right in the middle. It's like on the border of the alpha and beta quadrant. Deep Space Nine, if you're looking at it, is going to be to your left. Mm-hmm. It's going to be over towards, you know, the other side of the galaxy.
On the crust.
Yeah, it's going to be closer to the crust. Mm-hmm. And not all the way, but a lot further over than where Earth is.
Right.
And Kronos is in the beta quadrant on the other side of Earth, on the right side. So this is a long trip.
Now, maybe they went through the stuffed crust with the cheese in the middle.
it's the Hyperloop technology that Elon Musk is working on.
Or maybe they just folded it in space. They just folded the pizza in half and they just walked across.
There you go. I was going to say, though, the tranquilizer thing looked like it, like one put him to sleep and the second one woke him up. Yeah. That's what it looked like to me.
Maybe it made him die. You know, he was like technically dead.
Checked down his organs for a couple days.
And then he pierced his organs.
Right.
So they find out that he is in on Kronos and that he is now, because DeGore died honorably, he is the one to be taken over the house. And he's to marry.
DeGore's the brother.
I'm sorry, not DeGore. Yeah, Korza? Kozak. Yeah. Kozak is the guy who died that he's supposedly killed, and so he gets all his belongings, including his wife. So now he's married to his wife.
Yes, she forcibly marries Quark.
I was going to say, I thought the whole point was that, like, if Kozak died honorably, then his wife couldn't take over the head of house,
right?
Because then it would go to his brother.
Yeah. So.
But if he didn't die honorably, then she could have petitioned to be head of house.
Yeah. The wife is Gricka.
Grilka.
Yeah.
She comes back later.
Yeah. Yeah. She does. But
in another fantastic episode.
But yeah. So they are wedded. And he is...
She kisses him, then spits immediately. Like, oh, I can't believe I did that.
Right.
Although I'm surprised she didn't bite him, because that's more like the Klingon way.
Yeah, it would be fun.
Considering there's no word for kiss in the Klingon language.
True.
Which we know from our friend Jen, the Klingon pop warrior, who sings the song, Hitchop.
Hitchop. Yeah. It's great. It's awesome. Bite me, basically.
Yeah, it's bite me in Klingon.
Next, back to the B-plot. Miles goes to Cisco to talk about his problems with Keiko.
I know your dick's got to be way bigger than mine. Can you take care of my wife?
I've got the Irish curse, Captain. Or Commander. He's not Captain yet.
Could you look at my... Could you do me a solid?
This is more of a Bashir problem. So... Okay. Anyway, so yes, we are.
Jadzia and Kira are in the room as well, and they want to have some boys' time.
Boy time.
So boys can be boys.
So Miles asks him to be Cisco if he can use one of the cargo bays to make
arboretum
for Keiko.
Because that's what she used to do on the Enterprise, manage the arboretum.
Yeah, but she, you know. He's like, yeah, sure, no problem. But then Bashir doesn't think this is going to help whatsoever.
Yeah, Bashir's like, yeah, it'll only help for 2 months, and then she'll be back upset again.
He's like, wait, you've been married how long? What do you know?
Well, I guess he just knows from his week-long relationships that flowers work for a day or two.
Yeah, exactly.
So he only has a reference for...
I always like how guys that are always dating all the time have all the advice on women. It's like, well, what do you know?
Right.
You're like, how would you know? You're always breaking up with girlfriends.
Right? All of your relationships have since failed.
Yeah. Like why do I listen? Why do we listen to you, Bashir?
How many dates has Jadzia gone on with you?
Well, Jadzia would actually be the smartest person to have in that room.
Yes.
Because she has all perspectives.
She's like, I've been a man, I've been a woman multiple times, I'm both.
I'm kind of a slug. You know. I got multiple points of view. So then we jump back to the A-plot and the Klingon High Council, and DeGore is petitioning to the council to get Kozak's holding all his house and everything he owns.
Grelka comes in and they cause a big fit about there being a woman.
But then this bigger fit when they find out that Quark is...
Because she married a Ferengi.
Well, they're like, ugh, gross.
Although Gowron seems pretty okay with it.
He's like, this is different.
Well, it is different, and do Ferengi also have two penises?
Don't know that. This gets proven to Holly in Discovery.
He mentioned it.
Yeah, redundant organs. I'm glad that's actually been addressed. Because you've made that joke forever. And then Discovery just pushed it over the line.
And Discovery just gave me more ammo for my fire.
And now there's no stopping Dave.
No. But I just thought it was the weirdest thing. Because Gowron seemed to have no issues with this. Because Gowron was like, well, she did the ritual. Mm-hmm. And so it's cool, I guess. I mean, if...
Yeah. Right, right.
So, I mean, at least Gowron is at least kind of sticking to Klingon tradition.
Yeah.
Right.
That's kind of cool.
But then D'Gore openly challenges Quark, and Gowron, basically they're saying, well, they're going to have a face-off, basically, to find out, you know, who will get proper ownership of the house. And was it like at, you know, guns at noon
like
or whatever?
The next day or something. Yeah.
But I think that only came after Quark looked through all their...
yeah, that's when he goes through all his...
they go through all the transactions. He goes through all the transactions. Does it the Ferengi way.
Yeah, and when he approaches, like, the council, that's when he gets challenged.
Yes, right, exactly. Yeah.
This is, like, probably the best part of the episode, where he's got them all on calculators, and, like,
there's
this ledger, and all the Klingons are, like, just, like, no idea what's going on.
Yeah, if you go...
He throws it across the room.
Gowron just tosses it.
This is another thing. You're like, these guys are all like guys who are managing heads of their houses, heads of states, and they're like, I can't be bothered with this.
What did she call it? Like dirty ledgers or
filthy ledgers. Yeah. Don't sully herself with filthy ledgers.
How do Klingons exist?
Yeah, they just hope it all works out.
Right.
You know? But what Quark does find out is D'Gore, the brother, has been slowly attacking them financially for years and just crippling them as a house. So, then he exposes it later to the High Council.
And because during that scene, that's where they get a witness, because that's when he declares that Quark didn't kill him honorably.
Right.
And they find that it was an accident.
And Quark's like, the only vice president that was there was...
Rom.
And Rom! Rom walks in.
They bring Rom in.
Hello, brother.
Again, so he had to be kidnapped, like, the day after Quark was kidnapped. Because, again, this is not a short trip from point A to point B.
According to Warp 11. Well, next we find out that Quark is ready just to hightail out of there because he has been challenged to his death.
I don't want to die. Don't make me feel guilty, Rom.
Rom is making him feel guilty. He's like, oh, you're just going to let her, you know, lose everything to this guy. And
it's like, what do I care about a Klingon female?
I think she got in his head.
And Rom. It's always funny how Quark is always ready to bail, but then he gets, like, his conscience as prick.
He gets guilted into things.
All right. Yeah, so next we get the High Council again, and Grilka is standing there by herself without her husband, and instead of going to the duel, but then Quark does show up and says, I'm ready for the duel, and then just drops his weapon.
He throws the weapon.
Awesome.
Yeah, it's great. He gives this big old long speech.
He says, you know, I never had a chance.
He's like, this is an execution, so if it's going to be an execution...
Let's do it the way it should be done.
Yeah, just kill me, and... I love how, like, D'Gore is like, yeah, fuck it, I'll do it. And then Gowron steps in, and it was Gowron that stepped in, and Gowron's like, oh, if you're so low to kill a defenseless person, you have no honor.
Right, right. And then
so
they
you
all...
must have, you know, attacked your brother's house.
Klingon logic.
Right.
Always makes sense.
Yeah.
And then they do the discommendation on him, where they do the Wonder Woman and the turnaround.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, they all...
Wonder Woman copied Klingons, guys.
Or Klingons copied Wonder Woman.
Oh, chicken or the egg.
Yeah, I don't know. But so it all works out basically for Grilka and Quark, and then he says, can we just get divorced?
Yeah, because since this is a special dispensation, since he did die dishonorably, Gowron gives her head of household, and she's like, what can I do for you, Quark?
She's like, get a divorce.
I can give it to you right now.
And then she, like, slaps him.
Punches him, the sucker punches him.
Yeah, yeah. And he's like, and could you warn me?
Yells some Klingon words at him.
Yeah.
Right. And then, and, like, spits at him.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she's nice again.
Then she makes out with him.
Divorce should be that easy.
Right?
It should. It should be like I hit you in the face and that's the end of it. You know?
Although one of the parts we didn't mention earlier is when they were looking at the financial records. It's one of my favorite parts.
Oh, that is a great part.
Whenever, yeah. Whenever like he finds out all this stuff, and she's like, "I'm so thankful to you, and this is why I'm not going to break every bone in your body for."
I'm going to allow you to remove your hand from my knee
from my
instead of ripping it off of your body and beating me with it.
Yeah.
Which is
and then I love Cork goes, "Let's go talk to the counselor." Right. That is a great. That is probably one of the best scenes in the whole. Episode. And then she gives him a kiss.
She gives him a kiss, yes. And then we go back to the B-plot.
B-plot. Miles tells Keiko that there's a 6-month astrobiology expedition.
GTFO. I don't want to see you moping around here one more day.
They're in the mountains of Bajor, and they need a chief botanist. And he feels like she should apply for the job. And
what about Molly? She can go with you. Mountains are great for children.
Yeah, children never fall right off. They never fall down mountains. They never fall down. The hills are alive.
Molly! They just probably put her on a hover sled, like a hover crib.
Yeah, hover never crib. Fall. She just kind of floats there. Oh, that'd be cool. They should make those.
Yeah, hover cribs. That would be cool. You can take your kids into the mountains with you, and they'll be just fine.
And
on a leash, just keep going.
Yeah. There you go. Just yeah, hang there.
You just clip it to a leash. The hover thing and just come.
They'll have
you.
Just like those like little clips they have for mountain climbers.
Yeah,
and they're all just hanging there,
so they don't float off too far. Yeah.
Yeah.
A balloon.
Absolutely. So, and then we have the last scene is Cork and Rom, and they're back at the bar. And
it's a little heartwarming moment.
Yeah, Rom wants to hear his brother's story again.
Even though he was there and witnessed it firsthand.
He says, "I'm going to have to dock your pay for it." He goes, I don't care.
I just want to hear you tell the story. Yeah. Which is really sweet.
Yeah.
I love the relationship between Rom and Cork.
Right. And then... it closes.
Happily ever after.
Dave, I know this is one of your favorite episodes of Deep Space Nine. Why do you like this? What do you have to say about this episode?
I love Quark. Quark is one of my favorite characters. He's probably like consistently the most solid character in Deep Space Nine from the first season to the last season.
He never really changes.
He is always a joy to watch, except for Come Along Home.
Which one is that? The one with his mom, with Moogie?
No, I love Moogie. No, Come Along Home is the one where they're playing the game and Sisko.
Oh, that is the worst.
That is the worst episode.
And that's
terrible. That does have a Quark.
Is that season 2 or 1?
I think it's 1.
Okay, yeah.
That's the one exception for Ferengi episodes that I can't stand. Move Along Home, I cannot stand that one.
That's a terrible episode.
But usually I love everything to do with Quark and his stuff. I love the Klingons. I love Gurelka. I love how she shows up later, and I love how this episode sets up things, and Worf dotes on her, like, later, and then she's still, like, all, like, lovey-dovey on Quark, and Worf just can't stand it. Like, this episode sets up just another really great episode, so that's part of the reason I love it. I love the Klingon politics. I love how Gowron wasn't too offended by her marrying a Ferengi.
Right.
There's lots of weird little things about this episode that made it great. Although... rewatching it, I did not realize this was the so heavy on Keiko.
Yeah.
Because that B plot was about half the episode.
It's a lot, yeah. And it's funny because there's a lot going on Quark's side, and it was even funny they would even try to throw in the B plot.
Yeah, because they could have done a lot more with the Klingon stuff.
You really could just go on without the Miles Keiko story.
Yeah, and I mean, I knew that this was a thing and that he tried to give her an arboretum and that she left, but I did not remember it was this episode. And so I was, I guess, a little bit disappointed that it was so heavy on Keiko, but it's got O'Brien. I love O'Brien. So, I mean, like, three characters I love, O'Brien, Quark, and Rom. So, I mean, can't really go wrong with this episode. I really, really enjoy it. How about you, Aaron?
Oh, me? I like this episode. It's a lot of fun. I like seeing the politics of Klingons because they make no goddamn sense to me. And like I said, Ferengis are just so much fun. They're just so much fun to watch. And Armor Shimmerman is just great.
He is second to none when it comes to Ferengi. And you sort of picked this one, Holly. What do you
hear? Kind of, sort of.
I mean, you wanted to talk about Quark, and I just threw this one at you.
Yeah. I just, you know, like, I didn't really watch Like, I've never sat down and watched Deep Space Nine, like, all the way through.
Oh.
So it's like, I used to watch it with my parents, and it was on TV. And I just, Quark is one of the characters I remember. Like, I remember Guinan and Quark. I know they're not from the same
But bartenders. Series.
Oh, hey, I didn't even get the correlation. Well.
No, you're bartenders.
Yeah.
Dave's our bartender.
Right.
But.
But yeah, I don't know. There's always just something really fun about Quark, and you know, he's like,
except for moving,
got
along.
A lot of character. You know, he's cynical, but he's also helpful, and he's
helpful, and he's got a heart buried deep down there.
And
yeah,
like,
it shows up once in a while.
Yeah,
he's like the thief with a heart of gold.
Right. Yeah. So I just,
or swindler. I mean, he's not really a thief, but he's
maybe heart,
he's
of
crooked.
Maybe heart of platinum.
Platinum. Heart of platinum.
Yeah.
Gold pressed platinum.
Yeah.
But
because Fringi go back and forth on whether or not gold is valuable or not. Because the first time we see them, they're like, "Oh, your communicator's made of gold."
Yeah.
And they're like super into it, and then later, Quark is like, gold is worthless.
Right. Yeah, it's a fun episode, and it's great to see. I mean, Deep Space Nine, I mean, I know, like, Next Gen had a huge story arc with, like, Worf and being, you know.
Oh, the discombination.
Discombination,
yeah.
in the Klingon Empire and all that stuff, and there was a huge story arc, and so we got a whole view into the Klingon Empire and Klingon politics and just how they were. More so than ever. And then Deep Space Nine, we got so much more Klingons, too. It was awesome. It was like tons of Klingons there, you know, General Martok and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. I love General Martok. And we met J.G. Hertzler last year at the Nickel City Con. And
right.
That was such an amazing pleasure.
Yeah, he was awesome.
To get to talk with him.
Right.
He is just as awesome as his character. He's just as awesome as you'd think he'd be from seeing his character on the show.
Yeah. That character, Martok, is kind of him just without the makeup. You know? So, yeah, he's great. So, but that's the cool thing is Deep Space Nine, we get so much Klingon culture thrown into it. So, it's neat.
Yeah, and, you know, we get to see those episodes where you know, they dress up as Klingons and they go to that thing. They try to figure out what's happening with the Dominion.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, they're all, like, pretending to be Klingon, which is fantastic.
Wasn't somebody, like, really an ugly Klingon?
O'Brien
was super ugly. Yeah, O'Brien's terrible-looking Klingon.
And Sisko was actually a really good-looking Klingon.
Yeah, but you ever notice they always get, mostly they get African-Americans to play Klingons?
Yes.
Most of the time. I mean, once in a while you get a white guy, but most of the time it's...
But even when they are white guys, they do a ton of dark makeup on them.
Yeah. And usually the guys are taller in stature. Like even J.J.
J.J. Hertzler.
He's
a tall guy.
He's a big guy. He's like got to be over 6 foot.
Yeah.
I mean, he's older now, so maybe shrunk down a little bit, but he's a good sizable person, so...
Yeah.
They don't cast... You know, short Klingons.
They don't cast small guys as Klingons, which makes sense. And you know, African American guys do tend to be on the larger side, as far as stature goes.
Yeah, yeah.
So I mean, it makes sense.
Yeah.
And D'Gore, he was big. I mean, Quark was like exaggerating that he's a whole meter taller than him. But you know,
I always thought that were like, yeah, I always thought Fringies were sort of like almost like the hobbits of. You know,
yeah. Armin Shimmerman's definitely short.
Yeah, they always get the shorter guys. So, anyways, yeah, fun episodes. Really enjoy it. Good stuff.
Absolutely.
Anything else we want to talk about this episode?
Man, it's sort of simple.
It is a very simple episode. There's really not much more than just Quark, you know, accidentally gets Klingon's murdered, and he gets abducted to Kronos and gets put into Klingon politics.
So just so we can keep this conversation going a little bit.
Yeah.
Holly, today we watched the first episode of Star Trek Discovery with Holly.
Mm-hmm.
And because Star Trek Discovery is so Klingon-based, I do want to mention that something very similar to House of Quark happens in the very first episode of Star Trek Discovery. Klingon sort of falls on his own sword.
Oh yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
The same thing.
Oh yeah, the torchbearer.
Yeah, the torchbearer. Yeah, like you know, like she just like rams him, and then you know, the sword goes through him instead of through her.
Yeah,
and I'm like, huh, that's an interesting parallel.
Yeah, right. Yeah, exactly.
What do you think about that? It's like it's.
But Klingons are always the dummies that always get killed. They're always like, for all their bark, they're like
their bite's not all that great.
Yeah, you know, once in a while they get a good.
And you'd think they designed their own armor to, like, you know, withstand at least their own weapons, especially if it's like a spacesuit.
No such luck.
Oh, yeah. And then, you know, also just thinking about Star Trek Discovery and Klingons in general, remember in the first episode of Discovery where the beacon goes off and it's that bright light and it's that horrible noise, and I'm like,
yeah,
that's typical Klingon engineering. It's not simple. It's not. It's just purely functional.
Hits you over the head.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just kind of just like there's no real like nuance. There's no nuance to it. It's just. No.
It is just a club.
Like, jeez.
Yeah, they're going deaf. They're going blind.
Yeah.
They put the blinds down on the
put the
on
blinds
the window,
down,
and it's still like blinding light.
Yeah,
I was like, there's no subtlety to anything Klingon.
I'm surprised that no one they didn't do anything about like ruptured eardrums or anything like that.
They should have. Yeah, they should have for sure.
Like, if it was so bad and it was such a strong beacon, like,
yeah, yeah.
I don't know. Just seems
people
weird
go
that they
people
didn't.
Go blind. Like,
you know, yeah. Their shields are up to 100%, and it's still nothing has changed. So it's just crazy.
And what are the people, the Klingons inside the ship? Aren't they going like, my ears? You know,
maybe it's like pain sticks. They just have to like, grin and bear it.
Yeah, this is just test.
Klingon ships even have like lots of windows?
Not many.
Like, the sarcophagus
ship does have a big window in the front.
Yeah.
Theirs does, but
The traditional D7 had some windows and
there's no traditional ships in Discovery at all.
No, I know,
except,
I know.
Except for the Bird of Prey, kind of.
Yeah.
It was just curious because, like, if you don't have a lot of windows, you better hear that. You know, hear the beacon rather than see
it. Yeah, see the beacon. Yeah. Yeah, I know. Like, yeah. What's that?
Well, I mean, it's sending transmissions. So the Klingons do answer it at the end of the episode. Because they all jump in.
Yeah, right.
So synchronized, too, which is kind of amazing.
How they all do at once. Yeah, no.
They're like synchronized swimmers, but in space.
It reminded me of, like, the Death Eaters and the Dark Mark in Harry Potter.
All right.
You blast the mark,
yeah.
And then
everybody
shows up.
They all show up.
It's like teleport in.
Hey!
Got that message.
Right.
But it's just great, because just comparing the first episode to House of Quark, especially when it comes to Klingon language, they did use, I know when we had Jen on, we talked about...
especially Deep Space Nine, she said sometimes they did not use real Klingon.
Did not use real Klingon. Yeah. In this episode, they did use real Klingon in House of Quark, because they did the Choi Chu. Mm-hmm. Which is the beam me up thing, because they said that in Star Trek 3.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, okay, I recognize that. They did say kapla. They didn't say it correctly, but they said kapla. So, I mean, that's a success. And they said like one or two other words I think were legit Klingon.
Right.
And I was like, yeah, that's great. And then, like, you go to Discovery, and then you've got people who are trained to speak Klingon phonetically correct.
So
it's
so
like
nuts.
Night and day difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Hearing like real Klingon versus people like.
And they're so like. They have the makeup and the teeth, and so it's like a real bizarre hearing them say it, because they're like, wah, wah,
wah, wah, yeah.
You know?
And I feel like I really want to watch, at least with the Discovery, I really want to rewatch the Klingon scenes, because I want to know what they're saying, and then I actually want to see
what's
the scene,
happening.
Because,
yeah.
Like, that's my thing with reading. Like,
yeah, I know.
I never get to see the picture.
And the Klingon ship is so intricate. It's one of the most interesting sets in Discovery.
And
you're stuck looking
so
at the words.
And there are so many physical tells that, you know, actors have to know to do. They can tell you a million things with their eyebrow twitching.
Mm-hmm.
And like, if you're reading, you can't really pick up on that. So I was like, I'm gonna have to watch this like 7 times.
Yeah. I actually watch most of my stuff. I put subtitles on anyways.
Mm-hmm.
Mostly because, like, when I watch TV or something like that, I have it because the kids won't hear it.
Yeah.
So it won't be too loud. So I can pick up stuff. So it's funny because a lot of times I'm reading ahead before they deliver the lines and not paying attention to the action as much as, or even the acting as much. I'm like reading.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Kind of pulls the joy out of it a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
But also, I always know exactly what they say, because a lot of times I'm like, what? What they say? What? I'm like an old man.
Yeah, I get that way too. I have a hard time hearing things sometimes.
Like, what?
All the headphones I wear.
What did she say to him? She said that she could never be with him again. What? I'm terrible. Grilka!
Grilka, don't leave me. Don't leave me, Grilka.
Was Grilka Was she play any other parts?
The actress? I don't know.
Oh, okay.
I didn't look her up.
Yeah, I didn't either. I didn't know if she played anything else. We'll have to look it up later on. Grill cut. You can look it up.
Yeah, look it up. Wow, we like blew through this.
There's not a lot to talk about in this episode.
House of Pork is really simple. It's not like a deep episode where there's lots of philosophical things to like get into.
Yeah, just kind
of
like...
It's just kind of there. It's just a fun episode, and that happens sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, like fluffy episodes. It's not like...
It's more fun to watch than anything.
Yeah, there's no like heavy-handed like political message really in it, or...
There's no morals.
I mean, yeah, it's just...
Really? You know, other than Cork shouldn't have shot his mouth off. Yeah. Well, actually, but if he did, he would have been killed.
Yeah.
Because his brother would have avenged his death.
So lying can save your life.
Lying saves your life sometimes.
Who knew?
Well, the actress who plays Grilka, her name is Mary Kay Adams, and she is a white woman.
She's a white woman.
Yep.
Does she play any other parts in Star Trek?
I don't think so.
Other than Grilka?
No, she's not... credited as anything but Grilka, at least through Star Trek.
Good find. But I mean, she does play Grilka twice.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Man, we should have watched that other episode too. We'll get to it one day.
Someday. Exactly. Grilka. Sing about Grilka.
No one but Grilka can come to me.
Grilled cheese made by Grilka.
Grilled gach.
Grilled gach. Ah, gross.
Although Klingon don't like cooking their food. They like eating it raw.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, which is kind of funny because in episode 4 of Discovery, it looks like the drumstick that Lorel eats is cooked. Probably because the actress didn't want to die.
Yeah. She didn't want to get salmonella. She's like, wah! Really throws herself in the part. Greasy.
Mm.
All right, shall we wrap this up, Dave?
Yeah, I think we'll wrap it up. It's a short episode. Our first time back in 2 weeks. It's been fun. House of Quark's fun. Unfortunately, there just isn't a lot to it. There's no...
It's a fun episode.
It's a fun episode to watch, and I encourage everyone who's listening, if you haven't seen this episode in a while, and if you're one of those people that don't hate the Ferengi, give it a shot. If you hate the Ferengi,
I can't. You get to see a different side of Quark.
Yeah, actually, I'm not a like Dave really likes the Ferengi. I always kind of hate the Ferengi, but this is fun to watch. This is hilarious to see. Oh. The fish out of water kind of episode.
Oh, so even if you don't like Ferengi, from a Ferengi hater to a Ferengi lover, this is a universally enjoyed episode. So yeah, if you guys haven't seen it, check it out. We implore you, check it out. It's fun. It's Deep Space Nine. It's hard to go wrong with Deep Space Nine once you get past the second season.
With all the, you know, the girl power stuff going on right now, it's a good episode for that.
Oh, yeah. It's strong female character. Female character. Right. I mean, like, that's about as badass as you can get.
Right, right. Yeah.
Abducting men, forcing them to marry you at knife point, and getting them to fix your house
for
you.
Not that we're recommending this.
But girls, if you're looking for a man, you know what to do.
You just got
to
get that shit done.
Take him by knife point. Give him a roofie.
Give him a roofie. Take him far away from their home.
Just beware, the divorce is not that simple in real life.
You can't just punch him and knock him out.
Those drive-through marriage things in Vegas are legally binding. And divorce is not as simple as it was in that episode.
Right.
If only it were.
Hey, exactly. Save a lot of grief to people.
I wonder if there was no prenup, so he doesn't get anything.
No, that's cool. I'm sure he's all right with that. Just need to get away from that nonsense.
Just get away from Kronos. Get back to his bar.
Just get me out of here. Yeah.
But yeah, that's a good point. The girl power thing. It's a great written female character.
Yeah, she's cool.
And the thing is, let's get into this for a minute, since we're still under the hour point at this time. Strong female characters. You haven't seen much of...
That's another tie to Discovery, I take it? Is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah, we haven't gotten too far into Discovery yet, but I mean, like, generally Star Trek has a really bad time at writing strong female characters. Like, I like Michael Burnham, but I don't think she's as strong as she should be, and I feel the same way for Janeway. You know, she's supposed to be written as, like, this badass, strong female character, but she just comes off as bitchy?
Janeway's problem is purely this. They were they held back on her too much to make her too conservative, and then you didn't warm up to her. Probably till later you started getting, like, later seasons, you started feeling closer, or, like, you understood her maybe a little more, or something like, I don't know exactly.
She was too off-puttish from her crew. Like, in Picard held them at arm's length, but it didn't feel as far as Janeway did.
Here's my issue with, especially, well, that was obviously 90s, and the Michael Burnham. I think there's two different philosophies going on for both, for Discovery and for Voyager, especially. One, Voyager, they wanted to make her as strong character as they possibly could, but then they left out the human side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think they softened her as time goes on. Like, she slowly got more humanized and more. And she is a fantastic
Kate Mulgrew.
Yeah, she's a fantastic actress.
She's amazing. I mean, like, I've said this before. I never fault Kate Mulgrew. I feel like it's always the right.
The writers, I think, shortchanged her a lot. Now, for Michael Burnham character, I think they wanted to show a damaged person who is up against something that she can't control. And I think that has to do with our society today, what they think people are looking for. I'm not entirely certain about that, but where technically you should be seeing a person at their, you're in a utopian society, technically.
Yeah.
And you should be living to the full height of your being, you know, if everything goes right. So, you know, I don't think they, I think that's how they wrote her, as someone who's had some bad shit thrown at her.
Yeah, but there's that, but also some of her lines are just awful. And if there was any if the actress wasn't Sinequa Martin-Green, and if she was, like, more of like a nobody, the character would be damaged even worse because of line delivery. Because some of those lines I was still cringing at that Sinequa was saying, because they were just
like, what lines are you, is there anything specific you're thinking?
Almost every single time where she's just saying, like, 15 or 20 different emotions back to back.
Emotions?
Yeah, she's like, oh, I feel happy, but then I feel sad, and then this, and then that, and then...
Well, because she's walled herself off from emotions.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's the Vulcan thing, but those lines are still clunky. They're weird, unnatural lines.
I do think some of Discovery's dialogue is a little weird here and there. It's not terrible.
But I just mean some of her lines specifically are, mm-hmm. are kind of on the harder side.
I do feel like her character is almost too thought. It's too hard. They tried to write it too hard. They were trying too hard when they wrote her.
Yeah.
And I think they should have given her a little more breathing room and let her be a little more imperfect. And I don't know.
Yeah, but it's just interesting. Like when they give a female character, make her a main character in a show like Janeway or like Michael Burnham, they have all these flaws. But then you get these one-off characters like Relka. She's a badass woman, strong female character. She's amazing. I love everything about Relka.
Maybe because she's two-dimensional in this, though. Okay, let me then just switch gears here, Holly. You're the woman of the group.
Okay.
I mean, how do you feel? I mean, obviously you can't really say as much about Michael Burnham's character because
you've only seen the first episode.
You've only seen one episode.
But, I mean, maybe you can just take a quick impression. But then, you know, Janeway, obviously you grew up on Voyager. So, I mean, I think you've watched almost all of Voyager, haven't you?
Not really.
But you've seen a lot.
Recently I have been watching more of Voyager rather than like Next Generation.
What is your take when you see Janeway compared to like a Patrick Stewart, Picard, or you know that kind of thing, or even Sisko? Sisko is a bad example, but Sisko is very very imperfect.
Yes,
I mean I liked Janeway.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Did you feel like the beginning seasons she was too stiff? Or do you think you're all right with that?
No, I'm all right with that because when I'm at work,
you have
I
to
am
be.
Very
yeah.
get done.
Get things
get,
done.
Get in, get out, get it
right,
done.
Right.
So to me, it didn't feel odd, but maybe that's because I am maybe similar to her in that way.
Do you see yourself becoming captain soon?
Well, no. Although I was called captain.
Stranded somewhere.
A captain in high school, I was called captain.
Okay, how about this? And there's two dynamics here. One, us being men,
yes,
we see women in a different light. So we see women as either potential mates or nurturers, you know, one or two. Very often that you men have a hard time like seeing the difference
seeing
between
a leader
or just as a associate. Mm-hmm. You know, so you a lot of men have issues with that, so they can't separate the two. It's like either you're my, you know, you're like a mother nurturer figure, like a family figure, mm-hmm. or you're a potential mate. So they can't figure out that anything could happen in between. So maybe that's why sometimes we watch Janeway and we're like, she's too robotic.
She's so cold enough.
Yeah, she's robotic. Yeah. So we don't see,
But, I mean, I also want to point out here that, you know, like, also one-off characters like that lady in Lower Decks that goes on that suicide mission that was supposed to be okay but ended up still being a suicide mission and she died.
Right.
Like, she was an extremely well-written character.
But again, you're talking...
To the point where, like, you know, like, I cry when I watch that episode.
But here's the other thing is that when you're talking about that character and you're talking about, what's her name, Grelka, that you're seeing somebody who's a very quick character. Yeah. It's almost a sketch.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
So you're not seeing a full, like, when you see Janeway, you have, you know, like seven seasons or whatever it is. You have a full width of a lot of her interactions with characters. So mm-hmm. it's much different. So my feeling more than anything is that a quick sketch you can become attached to. Or hate, or whatever.
Depending on, like, the script. Like,
the script. If it's well-written enough, you can say, well, this is a fascinating character, and I really like this character. I wish I saw more of that character, but, you know, she died, or she was only in two episodes, or whatever. Mm-hmm. Or Janeway, we see a lot of, and we're just like, But you walk away from it, and here's the other side of it for a woman. That's the one, like, where we're seeing the nurturer and the potential mate, which turns off a lot of guys if it's neither. Women go into the world and they are faced with that and perverts and all sorts of assholes. People have their own issues with a woman being in charge or a woman, you know, and so there's lots of issues going on. So they have to put on that persona of mm-hmm. I'm pure business and I'm not going to talk to you about my personal life or I'm not going to get too friendly with you. I have to just get my job done.
Yeah, but the thing is, Picard was like that too because he didn't even play poker with the crew until the All Good Things.
Yes.
But
now,
at the same time, even though he did hold them at arm's length, he still felt closer with
his
crew.
No, but
here's
the thing. I think what happened with Picard or Patrick Stewart, I think there's two things. I mean, both of them are amazing actors, you know, Patrick Stewart and Kate Mulgrew. But the first season for Picard, maybe even second season, he's very stiff.
Yeah.
You know, he's. And then you start getting he likes archaeology and he likes this and he likes that. So you're kind of like, you get more acclimated to him. I don't think you get a lot of information on Janeway for a long time.
Coffee right. black.
Yeah, coffee black. Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay.
There's coffee in that nebula.
Well, I mean, yeah. Yeah, but you knew that he liked, you know.
Two-year-old girl,
Earl
yeah.
Grey, you know.
Yeah, but I just can't think of anything else Janeway likes other than controlling how men act and, in the hologram, the Fairhaven episodes,
where
she's like, "Oh, I'm going to make him exactly how he's perfect, except for he's nothing about what I want. So I'm going to take out all the things I don't like and make him my perfect man."
Yeah.
And then she also likes doing like Anne of Green Gables or whatever in the holodeck program. Like I don't think we ever learn much about her
other than she's married.
Right.
No, she was engaged.
Oh, engaged. I'm sorry. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, so I think there's a lot of things at play there that's more dynamics than we really are giving proper credit to, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think my feeling has always been Janeway was written too stiff, and then they...
Written too stiff, and like they just didn't give her much character. Like
They put no meat on her bones afterward. Like there should have been far more back history in her.
Story.
And, yeah,
like she was like the scientist captain.
Well, look at Picard when he goes back to after Best of Both Worlds when he goes to his brother's place.
Fantastic episode.
It's a heartbreaking
so good
and it's so good and you're like, oh, this is where he's from and this is why he's got problems with his brother. He's got these emotional issues that he's going through. So. We never got anything quite that strong from Janeway, so.
But the thing is, most other characters that we got to learn more about.
They focus a lot on the crew, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, Star Trek's always been an ensemble show. I mean, I don't, you know, except for TOS and now Discovery.
Yeah.
TOS, Kirk was very clearly the main character, and then you had two strong supporting characters, and then you had a bunch of C characters.
Right.
The Next Gen was very much an ensemble show.
Right. And you would have a Troy, you'd have a Data show.
Worf episode, yeah. And even season 7 becomes the Worf show. I mean, Worf gets so many episodes just for him in season 7. It's crazy. So, you know, Next Gen is an ensemble show. DS9's an ensemble show. Voyager's an ensemble show. And for some reason, they're trying to shoehorn in Michael Burnham as this main character person. And I'm like, there's so many characters in Discovery that look interesting, and we don't learn anything about them in the first season.
Right.
So many characters, and it's just like, they're not even characters. They're just like silhouettes of people that just are taking up seats.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't even call them characters because we don't know anything about them except for maybe their name.
Yeah.
Well, that might also go back to what Aaron said earlier about trying to give viewers what they want, and maybe with life today and how social media is just like attacking people from all different directions, maybe they just feel like people will focus better on just one or two people instead of.
It might be the case. That might be the case, and it obviously they're trying to get the certain. I mean, we're only season 1. I mean, we're only 13 episodes in, so we don't really know if we're going to get more characters and what else we're going to get. So we don't know.
Yeah.
So, but it. I did feel that Michael Burnham's character, while there's a lot of interesting things about her, that she is not as fascinating as some of the other characters.
Oh, no.
You know, Stamets is really interesting.
Although I'm scared he's not going to be interesting anymore.
Well, we don't know.
Second season, unless they make him go back in. But
Lorca's interesting. What's her name?
Tilly.
Tilly's great. So, I mean, and these are characters you haven't quite met yet, so right. It's going to be great when you get into them, because you're going to be like, oh, these are fun characters. Yeah, I guess it's more of maybe she's like the linchpin, and I just hope that she lives to her full potential, that they kind of like, you know, ticket her as. Like, she's like this great character. And she does prove herself time and time again.
Sure.
She basically makes one monumental mistake.
And then spends the whole rest of the show trying to fix it.
Lamenting about
it. And, you know, it's good. I mean, it's a character arc, but I just like the ensemble so much better, because you get different POV episodes.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wish they would do more of that instead of shoehorning her in as the main character.
Well, I think you were going to ask, like, how I got what my first impression of her was from that first episode.
Yeah.
And I think it's interesting that she has, like, PTSD, and she's working through those issues because it's not just PTSD that she's working through, but, you know, she's like, this is how I was raised, who am I, you know, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that's kind of a big issue today,
right?
So absolutely. I mean, I think that's important. And, you know, Star Trek was a good family show because they touched on important issues of the day
without batting you on the head with
exactly.
It they just kind of made you think about it. So
family, we would discuss it at the end. So Holly, do you understand what that was? Or, like, you know. So I think that they've always done that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, unfortunately, the only big thing about Discovery is it's really not quite a family show.
Yeah.
After you've seen it, you'll see it's pretty R-rated.
Gotcha.
So that's actually one of my sad points about Discovery, is that, you know,
I can't watch it with
my kids. You know, it's like, it's really not appropriate for them. So
yeah, that's a big point of contention. But I mean, I think
it can't. But my issue too is it can't all be adult thing. It can't all be Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. I don't mind that there are Game of Thrones shows out there. I enjoy all that stuff, but, you know, kids should have something that they can say, like, watch with their parents.
Mm-hmm.
Parents can enjoy it, and so can their kids. You know,
right.
So,
well, there's still 700 episodes you can watch with your kids.
No, there is, for sure. For sure. Yeah.
So I mean, I don't mind that Discovery is R-rated. I think it's interesting to have R-rated Star Trek, because we've never had that before.
Yeah. No, I'm intrigued. I mean, it's not over the top. I mean, there's a couple scenes that are like, you know, like, especially some of the torture scenes you see later. Yeah. Like, you're like, whoa, you know, but yeah, besides that.
Yeah, it's not bad. But it's just an interesting kind of look, because I think Star Trek is still struggling with writing strong female characters as when they're leads. But when they're one-offs, they do a pretty good job. But maybe it's just because you don't have to develop them any further. I don't know.
Yeah, it's a weird thing because I don't think any other series I ever can say that they have a hard time writing female characters. You know, Game of Thrones, tons of great female characters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I'm saying like most main female Star Trek characters aren't great. I mean, Troy isn't all that well written.
Yeah,
Crusher has her bad points. Pulaski was god awful.
Yeah, Pulaski was terrible. Tasha Yar was kind of.
Tasha Yar was really bad.
Obviously, throwaway. Throw her into a black pit. Well, but then later on, you know, Kira
does get better as the show goes
Kira
on.
When I first met her,
Kira is pretty cool, but you know, she's a little grating, but that's kind of her character, anyways.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dax should have been way more interesting than she was.
Dax should be awesome, but she's just not like Dax.
Maybe Terry Farrell just didn't have like the guy, but she wasn't. That's also I can't blame it on just her acting, mm-hmm. because I feel like even when she did get episodes thrown to her, that they just weren't that good. Like they didn't know how to write for her. Yeah. I just feel like Star Trek has a hard time writing for their main female characters, and that's discouraging to me.
Maybe it's mostly men writing.
It is, but there's one main female lead writer on Discovery at least.
Yeah, no, I know that. I mean, but
the previous shows, I don't know if there was a main female lead in the writers' room. I don't know.
Yeah.
But
I don't know. I think Janeway was a product of the 90s in a sort of way that women had been coming up from like the 60s, 70s of, you know, like burn your bra and, you know, do whatever, you know, buck the system. And then they integrate into the system and they're, you know, the women in the workplace kind of. And that was, you know, 90s, it was more, I'm not going to say it was easier for women, but they were more into like the workplace more often. You saw them like in offices and stuff like that.
Right.
But they were still up against a lot. So maybe they needed that example of a woman to be that strong, almost cold character, you know.
Well, yeah. By that time, they were, you know, like you said, integrated, but they weren't in leadership roles,
right? So. And how do you become a leader in a organization or starship, and do it convincingly without getting people, you know, thinking like, you know, oh, she's weak because she's a woman, or oh, she's talking about her feelings now, or, you know, like all sorts of like cliches, you know, that get thrown at you. So maybe that's why they did that. I do think Janeway sort of suffers because we don't get to know her personally as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree. We don't get to know her very well. Most of the crew we get to know more personally than she does.
But here's one other thing about women, and I'm going to generalize, of course, but women often when they're tasked with something, they are extremely on focus and they almost sometimes obsess on things.
I'm an overanalyzer.
Yeah, they obsess on it. It's like, okay, if they have an issue, they're going to find all the aspects. They're going to do all the research. And Janeway is very much like that, where a guy will say, like, I'm going to work on this, but, you know, I'm going to knock off and watch the game for a few hours or something like that. You know, like, I mean,
hey, how'd you figure that out? I just, like, tried this and it worked.
Yeah.
So we're good.
Yeah. Guys work on a different aspect. Like sometimes the guys need that downtime where women definitely focus on things until the task is complete. Mm-hmm. Sometimes also it, you know, drives them nuts because they are focusing on it so much. So Janeway reminds me a little bit of that, you know. She just focuses on a topic or a, you know, what the problem until to exhaustion.
Right.
Yeah.
Which, again, is another mirror to myself. So I guess maybe it's like,
Janeway, thumbs up. I never hated Janeway. I thought that she was just too stiff in the beginning. I thought she got looser and more interesting as time went on.
But she did break the Prime Directive the most.
She did. She did. Yes. Yeah, she did. Yeah, our Prime Directive series. So.
Yeah, that was the last thing we did. Prime Directive.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of Prime Directive.
Many Prime Directives. 5 episodes of Prime Directive. Anyways, so...
I don't know. I think that was a fun conversation to get into since we brought up that Grelko was a strong female character.
She was awesome.
She's a cool character. Right, right. But short, too shortly written. You don't get enough on her.
I thought it was really cool that, you know, you got to see a bravery from this Ferengi, but then you also saw like a vulnerability from a Klingon.
Klingon,
like,
right. Yeah.
It was really cool that
they both went out on a limb.
Yeah.
That they would normally not do.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, she actually ended up caring for him as right. a
right.
being, but not.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, you know, so it was cool.
Yeah, yeah. No, it is cool. And it's nice to when you see characters, you know, stretch out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and grow. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. And Quark always, like we said, he's got that heart of gold, but it's buried deep down there, you know?
Very, very deep.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
But, you know, I didn't really, like, as, like, for 7 of 9,
mm-hmm.
like, as you got to know her more, like, as they continue to write for her, I liked her less and less.
Yeah.
I think that's weird.
She
yeah.
gets more human. And then she gets
like
more, not even human, but
less like,
yeah.
Well, she did become like the focus of the show when she came on the show. So like half the episodes for the rest of the run are written for her.
Right.
So they do like flesh her out to the nth degree, but I didn't start hating her until she started dating Chakotay. And then mm-hmm. it became insufferable because it's such an unrealistic relationship.
Because you hate Chakotay.
I cannot stand that man. I can't stand Robert Beltran. I can't stand the way he acts. I can't stand the character. I can't stand that they made up all this fake Indian stuff when they had like actual real Indian stuff they could have drawn from. It was just garbage. And every single time he spoke to 7 of 9, he was super condescending and spiteful. And all of a sudden he dares the producer, hey, look, we should put us together because I haven't had anyone to date on the show. And they put them together over a stupid dare offset. It's nothing about that was natural. It was disgusting.
Yeah. Well,
she should have ended up with a doctor. That's all I'm saying. 7 Dr. Truther.
Or Harry Kim.
That was just going to be rough sex. That wasn't going to be a thing. Oh.
Boy.
All right. Well, on that note, let's wrap this baby up.
Let's wrap this burrito up.
Yeah.
Stick it in their pants.
No, don't do that.
I'm not putting any burritos in my pants.
Yeah. Hot sauce everywhere.
Oh. Now cool that down with some sour cream.
Oh, boy.
Oh.
Some soothing sour cream.
All right.
On that burn.
Well, Dave.
If you were hungry, you might not be.
Nah, yeah. We ruined like hundreds of people's lunches right now.
Hope you're not eating this on lunch break.
Yeah. Right.
Well, thank you, everyone, for listening. You can find this show online at Synthaholics.com. You can email us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com. You can join us on the Facebook group for all sorts of fun discussions. And, oh, Holly's got an announcement for the Facebook group page.
Yeah, it's going to be super fun. So I have a whole booklet of Star Trek Mad Libs, and we thought it'd be fun to challenge you guys to get a little interactive with us, and we're going to have you guys pick the adjectives and the verbs and stuff, and we'll fill them in, and
we'll
and
read them. Read it for next episode.
It's going to be great. So
yeah,
look
yeah.
for that on the Facebook page.
Yeah, the Facebook group for Synthaholics. Yeah,
yes.
And it'll be under Holly Michelle Vine. She'll be posting that.
Woo!
So that's fun stuff going on for that. Rate us and review us on iTunes. Mini Stars is great. If you've got any comments on House of Quark, any other episodes, you can email us at Synthaholics@yahoo.com.
Right. And if you can, please go to our Patreon/Synthaholics. Throw some money our way to keep the big wheel of podcasting rolling so we can keep on producing. And
Turn.
Exactly. And if you know somebody that might like Star Trek, like Quark, let them know about Synthaholics. Let them know about that we exist. Word of mouth is a wonderful way to support the show and let people know that we are here.
We are here. We are here. We are here for you. We're on iTunes and Stitcher and all sorts of places. If you own a Tesla, we're even on that platform. The only I can't remember what their podcast platform is called, but if you drive a Tesla, we are there.
Nice.
For you guys.
Yeah. We should put that on the Tesla like Reddit or something like that. We can find us there.
You can find
there
us.
You go.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Well, personally, I'm David_J_Duncan. Aaron is at Blackbird2004.
Mm-hmm.
And the show's at Synthaholic Duo, all on Twitter. Holly, where can we find you on the onlines?
On the onlines. I'm Lunar Thistle on Twitter. And I'm on Facebook.
Yep.
Yeah. I think that's all I do.
Oh, yeah,
I'm on like Instagram and stuff.
I mean, Nerdonomicon.
Yeah, I throw some videos up on the Nerdynomicon YouTube page from time to time.
YouTube.com/Nerdynomicon. And I know I haven't put out a video in a little while. And videos have been pulled also due to legal reasons, apparently.
Right.
So,
stop pulling your pants down. You'll be all right.
I know. I just can't help but show off.
It's those burritos.
It's the burritos. Hot sauce!
I'm just shaking my burrito at the camera. And sour cream just starts flying everywhere. I don't know. Things happen.
And YouTube does not approve.
No.
YouTube doesn't approve. But, stuff is coming. But there's still lots of drink videos on there you can watch and enjoy.
Yes,
and absolutely. Our podcast will be on there as well, and then our sister channel, the Nerdynomicon, they've got stuff. They're producing stuff.
Yeah, all the time.
A little bit more than we are right now. So
right.
Subscribe to them as well.
Yep.
Cool.
Well, thank you all so much for listening. We missed you guys, and we hope you missed us as well.
We're back,
Jack.
I only missed 1 week.
I know, but it feels like longer.
Yes, well, that's because you've had a very Lisa long hasn't 2 weeks.
Been a year.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
And it's been a year for Holly, but she'll be back with us for the next several weeks at least, I'm sure.
Yeah,
so live long and prosper, one and all. Thanks for listening. Mars, well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink before the night. Shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had. Bye, y'all.
Alright. This is the House of Quark. Are you ready for the House of Quark?
The Hearse of Kirk.
The Hearse of Kirk. Keiko, my wife. Please, Keiko, my wife.
Wife of my loins.
Wife of my loins? What? Tenderloins. Ooh.
It's like Craster.
Ooh, leave the tenderloins alone.
Craster had all the wives of his loins.
Who?
Craster. Game of Thrones, the guy that would be on the wall, the wilding guy who fucked all his daughters and made them
wives. Yeah, it's gross. Yeah. Thanks for bringing that up.
Yeah. It just brings a smile to my face.
Maybe that he's dead.
He's dead.
He's dead, Jim.
He's dead. All right, shall we do this thing that we do? That do thing
Doing
you do.
Doing that thing you do.
That thing you do so well.
That thing you do so well. Okay.